Good evening. Welcome to the program. It is Monday, the day before the big state Republican primary. I'm Michael Cohen with producer James Platy. On today's program, if you read the Wall Street Journal today, you may have seen the article on how doctors prepare for their own deaths. It's very different than the way the rest of us do it. I'll talk to the author of the piece in the second half hour. Also, an emergency room physician who spent 15 months in the Baghdad ER will be joining me to tell me about his experience treating soldiers and Iraqi civilians, often suffering from wounds that ER doctors here in the U.S. have never seen. But first, could tomorrow's Michigan primary be the day that Rick Santorum shocks the Republican establishment, wins, and changes the long-held assumption by many that Mitt Romney is the unavoidable nominee? Well, the former U.S. Senator from Pennsylvania joins me now to talk about that and exactly what kind of president he would likely be. Senator Santorum, thank you very much for joining me.
Well, thank you, Michael. I appreciate it. And we're certainly working hard to do well here in Michigan. We think we have an opportunity to shock people by, well, I think we have already, by making this a race in the first place. And I think our positive plan, our ideas to get this economy growing, particularly the manufacturing and energy sectors of the economy, which are so key here to Michigan, has really resonated with people here in the state.
You know, Mitt Romney doesn't hesitate to remind audiences that you did endorse him in 2008. You said that, quote, he is the clear conservative candidate at the risk of flip-flopping. Is that a statement that you now want to retract?
Well, he endorsed me and gave me money when I ran for election, and I didn't seem to hesitate to him to run against me this time. So, in the 2008 election, he was running against, at the time I said that, John McCain, and by comparison, he was more conservative than McCain. And but he also went out and did some things after that endorsement that led me into question that his conversion to conservatism, and it's clear it was a conversion to conservatism. He never ran as a conservative before. He ran as a candidate for that said he was not a Reagan conservative, that he said he was not for the NRA, that he filled out his questionnaires that it was pro-gay rights and pro-abortion and all of those things. But he said that after serving as governor that he has become more conservative and changed all his positions on those issues. And then I found out shortly after he left the race that he goes out and supports the bailout of Wall Street and says the government needs to be involved in taking over a sector of the economy, and has now stood up and repleted to his endorsement and support of the huge mistake he made in passing RomneyCare in the state of Massachusetts, which became the origins of Obamacare. Mm-hmm. You know, I've had a political career and I've made my mistakes. I admit them, and Governor Romney is standing by them, and I think incorrectly so. And we need someone who's going to have a clear conservative contrast to Barack Obama, not someone who is just a little bit better.
Now, both of you do agree about the GM bailout. You both say that you opposed the bailout. GM officials say without that, we would have had a protracted bankruptcy. Could have cost thousands of Michigan jobs. We even have two major plants here in Lansing. Many families could have been affected here. Are you saying that would have been a better option than the bailout?
Well, my differentiation on this issue is I haven't been for any bailouts. Governor Romney was for the bailout of Wall Street, and then shortly thereafter said no to Michigan and no to Detroit, and said, in fact, he wrote an article said let Detroit go bankrupt. My feeling was that we need to have a consistent position of allowing the marketplace to work and work efficiently and effectively. And
even if it does cost thousands of jobs, though.
Well, I come from the area of the country that went through just that. I come from southwestern Pennsylvania. I come from the steel industry, and nobody bailed out the steel industry. And I dare say that the steel industry and its breadth and its power at one point in time was rival to the auto industry. And yet that industry was brought to its knees, and a lot of dislocation occurred. But guess what? Pittsburgh is back. Pittsburgh is doing well. It took some time to do so, but it diversified. The steel industry is strong in America. It's been revitalized. Mm-hmm. It is not the same as it was before, but you have to believe that the way that the marketplace works, it will cause dislocation.
What about the way GM and Chrysler came back, though? I mean, isn't that an indication that we really did avoid what would have been a much more painful situation?
Clearly, we avoided a much more painful situation. We kept in place a structures of companies, but it would have been more painful, but not necessarily less profitable. And who knows what the auto industry would look like today? It certainly wouldn't look like these two companies. But that doesn't mean, look at Ford. Ford didn't need a bailout. Look at what they've been able to accomplish without going into bailout. And what, who knows what Ford may have picked up or what other companies may have picked up in parts and pieces of the other companies that could be out there and maybe even employing more people in the automotive industry. It's not that these facilities, unlike the steel industry at the time, had facilities that were antiquated and weren't reinvested in. The facilities and the workers were in much better shape in this situation with the auto industry than the steel industry was in the 1970s and 80s when they had these facilities that simply were not modern. That is not the case in the auto industry, and I think there would have been plenty of suitors and plenty of opportunity to recreate a vibrant and dynamic auto industry in this country, just not under the control of the current people who are running those businesses.
I'm talking to presidential candidate Republican Rick Santorum. Now, Senator, I do need to ask you about your social conservatism. Your former colleague Senator Alan Simpson recently came out and called you homophobic. What should the millions of gay Americans and their families think about your positions on the homosexual lifestyle and their private intimate behavior?
They're entitled to their own private intimate behavior, and they're entitled to the freedom to exercise their rights as any citizen. If you look at my record, you won't see anything that says that the government has any involvement. In fact, I was very clear, and the only time I was asked a question about a sodomy law in the state of Texas, said I would have voted against it. So there should be no concern. I believe that all people should be treated equally in society, and that's been my position from the very beginning of my public life.
Some, even Republicans, have criticized your focus on religious and moral social issues. Isn't it possible to be conservative on economic and security issues, yet allow Americans to address social and moral issues on their own terms?
Well, by definition, moral issues are issues that are in the public eye. There are issues that are before the Congress that the public has a right to know what your positions are, and I'm very transparent about what those positions are, and they will be issues in this campaign. The idea that everybody should go and do whatever they want to do, well, that's resolving the issue. If everything is licit, if there's no limitations on any type of behavior, well, that's a moral position, but we do have laws that say you can't kill. We do have laws that say you can't steal. These are moral issues that we have passed laws and said that there are certain moral acts that require government to pass laws to limit those moral acts because of their impact on other people. And to suggest that the answer to that is, well, let's just remove all moral, and there are some. Ron Paul suggests we should legalize drugs. That's essentially a moral issue. And so the answer is, well, just let everybody do whatever they want to do. Obviously, there are profound consequences to the people whose rights were going to be trampled by other people exercising their rights if government says just do whatever you want to do. The question is, what is the balance? And that's when we have a good discussion. And, you know, I think it's important to listen to other people's opinions and weigh them, reason them out, and see what is in the best interest of society as to where we draw those lines.
Now, you're Catholic. Mitt Romney is Mormon. Do you think your religious differences lead to any particular differences in your viewpoints on moral and social issues?
I'm sure everybody's religious backgrounds have an impact on, or lack of religious background have an impact on your moral points of view. Where else do you get these ideas? They're taught to you.
Well,
you're not born with them.
Initially, some voters said that they actually may not vote for Mitt Romney because he's Mormon. What are your views on that?
Oh, well, I don't think the founders of this country were very, very clear about that. There's no religious test for office, nor should there be. The tenets and teachings of the Mormon faith are not the issue here. We're not electing him as bishop. We're electing him based upon his public policy views. And clearly, there are teachings of the Mormon Church, like there are teachings of the Catholic Church, like there are teachings of a variety of different faiths that impact on moral questions before the public eye. He's not responsible for the Mormon. He's responsible for his views in that area. And I'm perfectly comfortable with anybody of faith or no faith, being able to hold public office and articulate that moral vision in as coherently a fashion as they can.
Why aren't you talking about Mitt Romney's wealth and the way he made his money? It's something that some have criticized. What are your thoughts about how Bain Capital operated and how sometimes his decisions did lead to job losses?
I think capitalism has, as we see, works to create jobs and create opportunities and create profits. And sometimes the businesses don't work out. The dynamics of the marketplace change. The management of the company fails. The workers don't produce well. The innovation doesn't happen. And things fail. The management of the overall management of the company doesn't work well. That's the ebb and flow. If you show me a businessman who has every time and every business they've been involved in, doesn't make any mistakes and succeeds in everything they do, they're very few and far between. And so I'm not going to criticize Governor Romney for his failings in business any more than I would expect to be criticized for any of the failings of my life in trying to do. I'm sure he didn't go out to try to lose money and get rid of people and from their employment. I'll certainly defend his right to go out there and engage in the private sector. I wish him well. I wish everybody well. That's what America is all about, for people to go out and do the best they can and hopefully succeed. And if they fail, pick themselves up and try again. That's the greatness of our country.
There is a lot of frustration out there, though. The Occupy movement appears to be in hibernation, but they'll certainly be back. Now, their argument that there's this 99% that's getting a raw deal while the top 1% is doing better than ever, do you think there is any validity to that perspective?
What the responsibility of the government of this country is to create equality of opportunity and making sure that everybody in America gets the chance to live their dream and provide for themselves and their families. And it's not the result, equality of result, which is where the Occupy people seem to focus on, that somehow or another the government should be the great reallocator of resources. That's not what America's been all about. America's don't envy the 99 in America. Don't envy the one or the bottom 10. Don't envy the next 10 or the like. This is a country that as long as people feel they have a shot and they can take whatever energies and talents they have and apply them in a way that is comporting with the kind of life that they want to live, that is what America's about. And it's not about having any kind of hard feelings between one group or another.
One last thing. I saw an attack out against you just this weekend, and it happened to be sponsored by Ron Paul. Are you frustrated that he seems to be focusing attacks on you and basically leaving Mitt Romney alone? And what do you think is behind this behavior?
I think Ron Paul has a pretty strong track record of attacking anybody but Mitt Romney. He attacked Rick Perry when Rick Perry was at the top of his game, if you will. They attacked Herman Cain. He attacked Newt Gingrich and ran ads against Newt Gingrich, and now he's running ads against me. I've long past tried to figure out what Congressman Paul's objective is in this race. My objective is to get the Republican nomination and to do my best to lay out a positive and hopeful and optimistic vision for the people of Michigan and the people of this country. And I'm not going to get bogged down in the process of why candidates, attack one candidate over another. All I know is that we're out there because we want to win the nomination and get this country back on the right track.
Finally, what happens then if you don't win tomorrow? Would you view that as a huge setback? Or at this point, are you looking beyond Michigan to other opportunities? And do you think you'd still be in the game?
Well, look, we're in Lansing today. We're working hard. We're going to try to run well here. But certainly we had no expectation when we looked at Michigan on the map that we thought that we would be even close to being in the shape we are right now. And the fact that we are is really quite invigorating and very hopeful that our message is resonating in the areas of the country where we have to win if we're going to win this election, in Pennsylvania and Ohio and Michigan and Indiana and Wisconsin. Those are these are a lot of the key battleground states that are going to determine who the next president's going to be. And the fact that we're running such an effective campaign against someone who's spending an exceptional amount more money than we are and, has deep roots, family roots, not himself necessarily, but his family has deep roots in the state, I think goes to show that we're the one that has the uplifting and positive vision that can rally people And the fact that we haven't run a dirty and negative campaign and tried to just tear down in order to win, I think is the reason, one of the reasons we're holding our support as well as we are.
A former senator from Pennsylvania, Rick Santorum, now, of course, the Republican presidential candidate. Senator Santorum, thank you very much for taking some time to talk to me.
My pleasure. Thank you. Bye-bye now.
Well, we had a little time to talk to the senator, covered all kinds of areas. If you have any comments about the interview, any thoughts on questions I didn't ask, maybe we'll have a chance to ask him next time he comes to Michigan, if he does in fact win the nomination. Let me know. Our email address is capitalcityrecap@gmail.com. We will be right back. I'm Michael Cohen, and this is 1320 WILS.